Remember to write your questions down for the question and answer session at the end of the day. Next talk is Dr. Grant, who's going to be talking about the surgical management of thyroid cancer. Sorry.
I guess I need to spend more time in Memphis. That it'd make it simple, because I'm going to sort of make this hard, maybe. First, let me say that even though the topic is said to be thyroid cancer, to try and cover all of the different types of thyroid cancer, particularly since the number of non-papillary thyroid cancers you will see is probably quite uncommon. I'll be happy to answer questions about those, but I've decided to focus on papillary thyroid cancer and look at strategies for what we talk about as some of the current vogue language is optimal individualized surgical management. That's what people are wanting to see in all of surgery. First, I think it's reasonable to look at the scope of the topic, and what I mean by that is, what are we seeing in thyroid cancer? And in fact, in the last 25 years, there has been, some would call it an explosion in the numbers. And I'll show you that even more recent than 2000, but this is a study from 2006 looking at the incidence, and it's rising, but note that the mortality rate remains flat and very low. And all of that increase, or nearly all of that increase, is due to papillary thyroid cancer. Follicular and poorly differentiated, very static, low frequency. And in fact, within papillary cancer, it's the small papillary cancers that we're seeing more of. You can see the so-called papillary thyroid microcarcinomas, which are arbitrarily defined as a centimeter or smaller, and those also that are 1 to 2 centimeters. That's where the increase has been over 25 years. A more recent study, 2011, looked at age as it relates to this increase. And again, this goes now up to 2006. It affects both young and old. And again, the same kind of tale is being told, where the relatively small, that is under 4 centimeters, there's the 4 centimeter, a little rise in that. But most of the increase is in relatively small papillary cancers. And in fact, the most frequent thyroid cancer since about the turn of the millennium has been a papillary thyroid microcarcinoma in a 45-year or older patient. And I think a great share of this relates to incidentally, serendipitously found lesions in the thyroid from carotid ultrasound. There, see, it's the trauma guys that are doing this. They get, no, it's not ultrasound. Okay, so CT, ultrasound, PET scans, all sorts of imaging will detect these little lesions in the thyroid, whereas before, if they were attempting to be detected by palpation, they'd be overlooked often. So what are the guiding principles? Well, first, I'd like to pay tribute and emphasize this slide. This is from Blake Cady. For those who don't know him, he's a senior surgical oncologist, well-known. He gave a presidential address, New England Surgical, and this is from 1997, so a while ago, but I think is very astute regarding tumor biology. What he said is, biology is king, patient selection is queen, and the technical details of surgical procedures are the princes and princesses of the realm who frequently try to overthrow the powerful forces of the king and queen, usually to no long-term avail. In fact, technical wizardry cannot overcome biological restraints. So a lot of the behavior of cancers in general and papillary cancer in particular are driven a lot by the biology. So I think it's fair to look at guiding principles as enumerated by the American Thyroid Association. These are published in 2009, soon to be revised, so sort of stay tuned. But logically, you want to remove the tumor and the metastatic nodes, as well as the involved structures if they're invaded, all the while minimizing morbidity, facilitating staging for further management, follow-up, radioactive iodine surveillance, and to try and minimize disease recurrence, both local and distant. Not hard to enumerate, all makes reasonable sense. So then we focus on the surgical guidelines. And for thyroid cancers over a centimeter, the usual recommendation is for either a total or near total thyroidectomy. Lobectomy is generally reserved for small 1 centimeter papillary thyroid microcarcinomas that don't have other high-risk features. You should take care of nodes that are known to be involved. That's therapeutic clearance. If the nodes are involved, you know it, remove them. Prophylactic clearance, and we'll get to this, is removal of nodes that you're not sure are involved or not, but not impressive. Just taking them out to sort of be sure, and I'll go over that in a moment. And you can either do that, or they've said, well, you know, for small papillary cancers, it's really optional if you take out those nodes. Now, what are the ABCs? Well, the A is high quality evidence. B is reasonable evidence. And C, which relates to this prophylactic central neck lymphadenectomy, is all expert opinion. Who are the experts? People who name themselves as experts. Now, they also say that these recommendations should be interpreted in light of available surgical expertise. Not everybody can do the same quality operation with the same risk parameters. I find it important to emphasize that not only remove the primary tumor, but they say involved cervical nodes, and that residual metastatic nodes represent the most common site of disease persistence or recurrence, and that we've known for a long time. And in fact, to do that, the single most important variable is adequate surgery. Okay, well, why do we have controversy in thyroid surgery? First, if we talk about some discrepancies, the extent of the thyroidectomy, as I said, the standard has been near total or total thyroidectomy. Well, we debated this for probably 25 years in endocrine surgical circles. I don't think we settled it. I think we just wore out talking about it. But about in 2007, Bill Amoria published a big study derived from the National Cancer Database, and he found that the recurrence was a little higher and the survival a little lower with lobectomy than total thyroidectomy. However, more current data, as well as big series from Sloan Kettering, our institution, and Leahy Publications, has demonstrated, as well as a big article, again looking at the National Cancer Database and more current and bigger sample, that in fact for T1 and 2 N0 papillary cancers, lobectomy is as good in terms of survival as total or near total thyroidectomy. Having said that, probably the safest thing is still to say right now total and near total thyroidectomy remain the standard for papillary cancers over a centimeter. So if we say we've sort of settled, maybe not totally, but we've sort of settled the debate on thyroidectomy, what's happened? Well, lymph nodes have become the center of attraction, and that's evolved for a number of reasons. But ever since the turn of the millennium, the focus has turned to papillary cancer lymph nodes. It's important to realize there is no randomized control studies that can be relied on to tell us what to do. It's important, as Katie said, is that lymph node metastases behavior mirrors the virulence of the primary tumor. If you've got a bad primary tumor, the lymph nodes are going to act bad as well. Most papillary cancers are not bad actors, and the lymph nodes also mirror that. The intent is lymph node dissection to prevent further dissemination, debatable, prevent local complications, uncommon but real. And one thing that's true, Rob Utelsman has said, that all endocrine surgeons agree that a compartment-oriented therapeutic dissection is indicated. That is, if we know the nodes are involved, we should take them out, and no longer do we do node-picking operations, we do compartment clearances. What do we mean by the compartments? Well, the central compartment goes from about the sternal notch up to right about at this point, even though you going all the way up to the hyoid is defined, but almost all lymph nodes are either here or below. And it includes all of the lymph nodes in the tracheosophageal groove next to the trachea and esophagus. And then the lateral nodal compartments are 4, 3, and 2, going from the hyoid on up for 2, a thyroid cartilage down to about the cricoid for compartment 3, and right and left sides. So what's the focus on the compartment 6 or the central compartment dissection? First, is it the emphasis on survival as an endpoint has diminished because papillary cancer is survivable by such a huge proportion of patients, and I'll show you that. The second is that recurrence, and I put that in quote, more than 90% of papillary thyroid recurrence is lymph nodes. They're common, they're commonly involved, and they start in the central compartment. Ultrasound, which you would like to be able to rely on, is good in the lateral neck, but before a first-time operation, it's very limited in seeing these central compartment nodes and judging whether they're involved or not. And in fact, surgeons, unless the nodes are obvious, surgeons are notoriously poor, and there are data to support that in judging benign versus malignant nodes. When relapse occurs, more than 50% are in the central neck, and the investigation for that relapse took on a whole different logic about the turn of the millennium. We are, and have been, for the last 15 years, looking with all sorts of sensitive methods for any evidence of recurrence. That is, ultrasound can see nodes down to as little as 3 millimeters, and a thyroglobulin of 2 is a very small volume disease, most of the time not even imageable by usual techniques. But if relapse is detected, it almost always implies some form of intervention, and that's associated with risk, angst, and cost. What we do know is that not all lymph nodes progress. We know that in other diseases, but it's become really apparent in papillary cancer. We don't know exactly the size or the virulence thresholds for these. There's been some work done looking for that, but we don't know what it is that they cross whatever threshold it is before they have a high risk of showing up as relapse. But the principal alterable strategy is completeness of surgery. So the factors to consider: lymph node metastasis frequency versus recurrence, value of the dissection in the central neck, the related risk of death, efficacy of radioactive iodine, and the safety of the dissection. Start with a lymph node spread. A very well-known, sort of small, but classic study by Noguchi in Japan looked at 57 patients who systematically he did node dissections, and 90% had positive nodes in papillary cancers. 57% of those were under 3 millimeters. So very small nodes, but yet there. And it started in the central compartment and then later moved to compartments 4 and 3, as we would expect by the behavior of papillary cancer. 80% of those nodes, not surprisingly if they're mostly 3 millimeters or smaller, were misjudged as being benign by the surgeon. And strikingly, in a subsequent publication in 1987, he then did 300 thyroidectomies without the systematic node dissection, and had reported no recurrence. So at least in that publication, it doesn't sound like you need to take those nodes out. I think probably one of the best studies to give me a feeling of what the recurrence is really going to be is a study by Mike Tuttle at Memorial Sloan Kettering, published in 2010, almost 600 patients, all of whom had had total thyroidectomy, appropriate lymph node dissection, and all of them had had radioactive iodine remnant ablation. And one of the big things that Tuttle has contributed is his ability, his categorization of the risk of recurrence of the patients after they've had all this treatment based on the pathology. And the low-risk patients are those people who have no local or distant mets, no invasion, no aggressive histology, all of it's resected, no radioactive iodine outside the thyroid bed. Intermediate microinvasion, maybe some uptake outside the thyroid bed, aggressive histology or vascular invasion. And the very high-risk patients are these macroinvasive, that is into the trachea, into the esophagus or something like that, or even incompletely resected or distant mets. This is almost more disease persistence. You couldn't get it all out. And the frequency in these 588 patients were a quarter, half, and a quarter. Now, that's not a very representative sample of what most of us see. Why? Because they have a high frequency of this bad group. But if we look at just these two, which is what we're more used to seeing, let's look and see what we find for recurrence. Interestingly, he subdivided it into structural recurrence, which is imageable or palpable, or biochemical, which is only increased thyroglobulin. As you might anticipate, the low-risk patients who had this very low-risk disease had a very low frequency of structural recurrence. And yet, if you want to include thyroglobulin elevation, it's 14%. And if you look at structural disease in intermediate, it's 20% and an additional 20% that are biochemical. So if you look at these two together, it's a third of the, it's 25% who have structural disease and over half who have overall biochemical or structural disease. Now, how do these patients do? That if you talked about other diseases, those patients would have a very high mortality risk. Well, after 7 years of even more treatment based on those recurrences, free of disease, two-thirds. Persistence, 28%. But if you talk about true soft tissue local recurrence, not lymph nodes, but true soft tissue local recurrence, only 1% to 2% had that. And of the 5% who died, 26 of those 28 patients presented with stage 4 distant disease. So papillary cancer recurs 25% of the time structurally, maybe as much as 50% if you include thyroglobulin elevation, but it rarely kills unless it presents as a bad disease at the beginning. Well, what's the value of prophylactic central neck dissection? Well, as I alluded to before, there seemed to be among endocrinologists to a fair degree this new millennial goal that we are going to eradicate every molecule of metastatic disease, whether it's biochemical or structural. And the way we do that is we image with high-resolution ultrasound looking for nodes that may be as small as less than 5 millimeters, or with stimulated thyroglobulin, investigating even levels down around 2, which is very minimal disease. I diverge just for a second regarding the economic impact of this. You heard a lecture about duodenal and pancreatic trauma that kills people. And I'm talking about a papillary cancer that I'll show you kills few. And this study is recent, published or presented at 2011 at the ASCO meeting. 232,000 cancer cases in general, adults, recent time era, and the risk, that is the conditional probability of medical bankruptcy, put thyroid as number 2, only about 5% only exceeded by lung. So what are we doing? We are spending a ton of our patients' money looking for disease that has a very low likelihood of being lethal. Back on track now. What happened to the surgeon's response to all of this intense investigation? Well, they looked at it and said, well, preoperative ultrasound is nearly blind in the central neck. And I can't always reliably distinguish benign from malignant appearing lymph nodes. So I ought to just take out the lymph nodes. And because lymph nodes occur that are positive in at least 50% of patients when I take them out, and if I miss them, if they come back, they usually come back in the TE groove right next to the recurrent laryngeal nerve, which is where they started in the first place, and that implies risk of complications at reoperation. Now, this is a patient we reoperated on. You're looking at the left side of the neck, head up here, sternal notch down here. Obviously, the recurrent laryngeal nerve here. These are not subtle lymph nodes. The surgeon clearly had an interest in doing a thorough operation, at least it seemed like it, because he did a total thyroidectomy and he did a lateral neck dissection. This was only about a year after he did that. So I think at times what maybe you ignore is different than what's in apparent. I think these nodes were there. So the arguments favoring the dissection, it reduces relapse. It can be done safely. More about that in a moment. It adds to information regarding staging. And in our view, radioactive iodine is not entirely reliable, quote, cleaning up those lymph nodes. A well-known study by a surgeon in Sydney, Australia, from a very highly respected surgical group, 447 patients compared thyroidectomy alone to central neck dissection. What'd they find? With neck dissection, lower thyroglobulin, in fact, undetectable in 72%, whereas thyroidectomy alone, only 43% undetectable. If you flip that around and you say, in very capable surgical hands, if you do a total thyroidectomy for papillary cancer, if you look to monitor just with thyroglobulin as well as ultrasound, you're going to cure the patient less than half the time. That certainly fits with the data that I just presented from Sloan Kettering. The next three studies are probably the best three looking at central neck dissection because they incorporate enough patients. This is a combined study. The design for all three is essentially the same, comparing thyroidectomy and central neck dissection to thyroidectomy only. All the tumors are above a centimeter. In this case, all got radioactive iodine. And if you look at recurrence-free survival, central neck dissection statistically did better. Another study, again, 600-plus patients, same design, same type of patients, total thyroidectomy recurrence 13%, down to 4%, disease-specific survival better with neck dissection. And the last, the study from France, same design, looking this time at central compartment reoperation, higher with total thyroidectomy than if you add central neck dissection. Meta-analysis of 3,000 patients, fairly equally divided. Lower recurrent risk with central neck dissection, but here is the potential Achilles heel. And that is parathyroid damage appears at least temporarily to be substantially higher if you take out the nodes. All the other morbidity was essentially equivalent. Radioactive iodine may or may not have influenced. So there are about four ways of going about the thyroidectomy and neck dissection that have been published. One is the conservative, where they say we add risk to the nerve, add risk to the parathyroids, add operating time. And it's known that even if you have a high frequency of nodal disease, the survival is unchanged if you dissect them. And they say that most papillary cancer-specific prognostic indices and scores don't even include lymph nodes in judging mortality, which is true. And then a couple of well-known endocrinologists added substantially to that perspective. As long as post-op RAI is planned, dissection of non-palpable nodes is probably not essential. That approach has gained considerable support across the country in the last five or more years. moderate surgical approach is what we have practiced in Rochester. We start with a routine preoperative neck ultrasound anytime we have a papillary cancer, but we're really looking for the nodes in the lateral compartment, recognizing that it's not very much help in the central compartment. We do total or near total thyroidectomy, routine central neck dissection, and lateral neck dissection as appropriate as judged by palpation or ultrasound. An aggressive step beyond that, in addition to total thyroidectomy and routine central neck dissection, is routine lateral neck dissection on the side of the tumor. Now, we feel that ultrasound is very good. Their ultrasound had a false negative rate of probably 25%, and they dissected the neck finding negative nodes in about 58%. We wouldn't be happy with that level of negative lateral neck dissection. And yet, they reduced their radioactive iodine substantially, and they had a very low thyroglobulin detectable rate at a year post-op. And sort of the ultimate aggressive version is total thyroidectomy and bilateral lateral neck as well as central neck dissection. These and adding radioactive iodine, they didn't get much from the contralateral lateral neck dissection, so they've backed off on that. And so it really gets down to kind of three modes: conservative, moderate, and aggressive. They had some complications, hypoparathyroidism in 4%. What's the related risk of death of these metastatic nodes? Probably the best known study that supports it, these nodes being worrisome, is from Sweden. And Sweden usually puts out really high quality studies because they have medical data on virtually their entire population. The problem with this study is that all of the patients were derived from a death registry. They had all died of thyroid cancer. So you've already selected the worst actors. Half only were papillary cancer. Fewer than half had the disease completely removed. And looking carefully, fewer than 5% actually had stage one disease, which is by far the most common that we see. So I don't put a lot of stock in this, even though for what it shows, it's powerful. It doesn't really relate to the papillary cancers that we see today. This is what we use to predict prognosis, that is mortality. It's a score that we derived from metastatic disease, age, completeness of surgery, invasiveness, which is gross invasiveness, even into the sternal or into the strap muscles, and size of the tumor. You put these together in the formula, and what you see is the low-risk category, which comprises almost 85% of the patients, have a survival that is almost completely unaltered by the disease. And if you compare that, higher risk, yes, they have a higher than normal risk of death. But in the low risk, predominant papillary cancer, it's on top of the expected survival curve. What causes death in papillary cancer? Clearly distant metastases, no surprise. When I say local recurrence, that's specifically soft tissue local recurrence. But if nodes are the key, they seldom kill. It's the tumor itself. As we said, and as Blake Cady has emphasized, here are T1 through 3 tumors. Even with nodes positive, their mortality is very low. But you move up to a very invasive tumor, they do worse. And again, the lymph nodes mirror the tumor, they do even worse beyond that. If we're going to talk about taking out the nodes, is there an option? Can we just give radioactive iodine? Well, there was a study from Washington University, 95 patients who had residual nodes on radioactive iodine scan. They received quite a bit of radioactive iodine. 9% of these were excised. An additional 9% relapsed. But impressively, 82% at least by radioactive iodine criteria, were cured of their disease without additional surgery. So there's no question that radioactive iodine is beneficial. But there's also no question that a fair proportion will need operation. In the National Thyroid Cancer Treatment Cooperative Study Group, they found that in over 3,000 patients with low-stage papillary cancer, survival was not improved with radioactive iodine. And in five and now six decades of follow-up, looking at the effect of radioactive iodine, we've been unable in Mayo Rochester to demonstrate either an improvement in survival or a lowering of local recurrence by the addition of radioactive iodine. The safety and value of compartment 6 dissection. I think that relates, in my view, to the safety of the parathyroids during thyroidectomy more than it does, at least for me, in the lymph node dissection. Most of the nodes are from the inferior thyroid artery south. They are commonly in front and on the right side behind the recurrent laryngeal nerve, and they're always there. If you can gradually mobilize the blood supply and the parathyroids off of the thyroid and eventually take the thyroid, you can do a total lobectomy and save the parathyroids. That's really great for the illustrator. For the surgeon, it doesn't always work out that way. In my view, one option is so-called near-total thyroidectomy, or near-total lobectomy, if you will. There are some who are total thyroidectomist purists that cringe when they see this, but for me, it's been of benefit. Here is the parathyroid that the illustrator shows closely applied to the thyroid. If as you're dissecting the nerve, you create this or open this tunnel that is always there adjacent to the nerve, and ligate saving just a little bit of thyroid above the parathyroid and carefully protecting the nerve in this manner, cut that and save. This is distal to the thigh and will die. This amounts to about 100 to 200 milligrams, so a small amount of thyroid to protect the blood supply going to the parathyroid. If you need to, I think this is a reasonable way to do it. And autotransplantation, as I implied earlier this morning. Now, the most common reported complication, however, is temporary hypoparathyroidism from doing this central neck lymph node dissection. It only takes one really well-vascularized parathyroid to maintain normal calcium hemostasis. But a half to three-quarters of the thyroidectomies in the United States are performed by surgeons who do fewer than five per year. In my practice, if I didn't know how to save a parathyroid, I would have disappeared from sight a long time ago. And if I do them over and over and over, I should be able to get that right. For those who don't do it as commonly, maybe the risk to the parathyroids is a real concern. So I devised a compromise, and I did this one time when I was sitting around, kind of like our luncheon today, and the surgeon said, you know, if you make me do a total thyroidectomy, and if you make me do a central neck lymph node dissection, I'm going to have hypoparathyroidism. And I know I'm going to. And I that night I thought, let's see, how do I fix this? Because I think hypoparathyroidism is a bad problem, and so do the patients who have it. So I said, well, how about this? And I thought this was a funnel, but one of the guys said, oh, this is the Grant Martini glass thing. So if you don't do a central neck dissection, and let's say you got 20 patients, and you're going to have relapse in what we said is about 20 to 25% that are structural. And you refer them for reoperation rather than taking out all the nodes to avoid the relapse in four or five patients. But if in the process of avoiding the lymph node dissection, you prevent hypoparathyroidism in a couple of patients, I think that's a reasonable trade-off. You can send these people with that need reoperation to somebody who does that. And these are the people who are declaring themselves that it's necessary to be done. It's one thing, as I said before, to talk about it, but then we need to be able to say, you know, it works. So I looked at 7 years of our initial operations, and of a total of 773 papillary thyroid cancer operations, I talked about optimized in 420, and I'll show you what I mean. All of them had ultrasound, near total or total thyroidectomy, routine central neck dissection, and as I said, lateral neck dissection as indicated. The usual patients, median age 46, 2-to-1 ratio, female to male, typical papillary cancer group. Total, near total thyroidectomy about 50-50. Here's the key. In the central node patients, 51% had positive nodes. Now, 20% had lateral nodes found either by palpation or more frequently by ultrasound. And when we did the central node dissection, a mean of 3 were positive. Complications, permanent hypoparathyroidism. I'd like to say that we were perfect. I'm sure all of these were some of my partners. They would say most of them are mine. Recurrent laryngeal nerve, only one unintentional damage. There were 5 that had to be sacrificed because it involved the nerve. And how did the patients do? This is a little skewed because these patients, the ones that had unresectable disease or stage 4 disease, were excluded. So in contrast to the Memorial group, you won't see a big group that is the high risk. They were excluded from this. This was only curable patients. But 91% were free of disease. A few had disease and were still living. A few had died, but unrelated. A couple had disease and died, what I said, with disease, but had other major causes for death. And only a single patient died of the disease. Again, not surprising, papillary cancer doesn't kill very often. Disease recurrence was prevented in 94% of potentially curable patients with an accurate ultrasound ahead of time, and 60% of our patients did not receive radioactive iodine. So it wasn't this that solved our recurrence issue. I would hasten to add that these results depend on the integrated team of endocrinologists, radiologists, pathologists, nuclear medicine specialists, and you see my bias, surgeons. So I think you can be surgically complete and yet safe and non-morbid in your approach to papillary cancer. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're back ahead of time. So it's break time. It's 2:25. So why don't we, you want to reconvene at 2:45? Gives us 20 minutes. All right?
Mountain because I had to. Yeah, I left Mountain because I had to.